Well, hello everybody and welcome to today's podcast, Charity Digital, of course. I'm Lisa and alongside my lovely colleagues here, we are delighted to welcome you to another episode. You actually may have read the headlines about Airbnb's most recent working policy and all staff are to work from anywhere in the world. It seems that that working arrangement was really, really unthinkable a couple of years ago, and now slowly is becoming the norm, along with new ways of using tech to better manage your days, your workload, your teams and your colleagues. So basically, that brings us to that question. What will working life look like in 10 years' time or even 5 years' time? So on the tech side, will robots perform volunteer services while we wear virtual headsets? Will it consist entirely of virtual platforms with virtual events held together by self-managed teams under flat structures, which means no boss? On the HR side, are we all going to work 4 days a week? Unlimited holidays, work from home or work from anywhere policy. Perhaps more likely, because it's still, you know, reality, things might look quite similar with small adjustments and more flexibility. The world of work has shifted monumentally. In the most recent Charity Digital Skills report, just over 2/3 of charities are planning a hybrid model for their working arrangements, whilst only 7% are planning for everybody to return to the office or the usual workplace. Companies and charities have played with internal structures and there are more talks to finally implement the new ways we approach working. Today, I'm joined by our team of experts at Charity Digital, our content editor, Ian Mark-Jones, and our content lead, Laura Stanley. Very nice to see you again and to speak to you. Hope you're well, both of you.
Yeah.
Very well. Thank
good.
You too, Lisa.
I am fine. I am raring to go because I'm sure we have loads to discuss about what the new world of work culture will look like. Do you want to get us started, Johan?
Yeah. I think the interesting thing about the Airbnb news, which I think we've seen that from a lot of companies just intermittently all the time, they're doing this. And the key thing, the driving point for me is that charities, like companies, need to attract the best talent. And the way they're going to attract talent is offering that as an option. Because, of course, if you offer complete remote working, you either offer complete remote working mandatory, like you don't have a in-person space to go to, or you offer hybrid. You come in when you want, if you want, which is what a lot of law firms, for example, are doing across in the legal sector, where it's kind of platform alternatives where, you know, you have the working space should you desire it, but we encourage people to work from home. And I think so the big thing driving complete remote working is the attraction of talent. But the other thing is I think a lot of companies, a lot of organizations and a lot of charities have realized that when we think of remote working in the distant past, we always think of like a way to put it bluntly, people always thought they were skiving almost, you know, having almost a day off working from home, checking your emails. I think two things happen. One, that ceased to happen during the pandemic because people had work to do. You could kind of come into the office maybe and do some hard day's work and then buy yourself some time. You couldn't do that during complete remote working. The other thing I think loads of companies overestimated was how much work people actually do in the office. Like, so for example, I mean, we all know people in the office who spend a lot of time on social media, take longer lunch breaks, sit there, talk, socialize. These are all good things, the socializing, not the scrolling through Twitter. The socializing is a great thing, but a lot of time in the office isn't actually focused, dedicated work.
It is actually
true. Yeah. And me and Laura are both from content team. A lot of our work is editing. A lot of it is writing. And so we need time alone with our thoughts, thinking up ideas, and that actually a lot more conducive when you're at home. So I think remote working has become appealing for basically commercial reasons. It's not trying to be nice to employees. It's not, oh, this would be a nice thing to offer. It's we're going to get the top talent, and people work from home and they don't work as much in the office as we think.
I think I remember reading a stat a few years ago that said people actually overworked when they're working from home.
Yeah,
they wanted to prove how much they were.
Yeah.
And also you don't have the commute. So it's just very much easier to get started on your work day, isn't it? Like, and I think coming back into the office now, I love the social part and I love seeing people. But yeah, it makes it easier to split up my week a little bit better because I know when I need to be down and focused and when I've got a bit more time to not be. Like, it's it. But then it's easier when I need to ask my colleagues and talk to them about things. So, I think hybrid is a great model.
Hybrid is the model. Back. I mean, and we talked a lot about hybrid, particularly in the content side. But we know the pros, it suits flexibility. It's great for diversity because particularly with children can come in and they can work it around that life. I mean, it shows people can basically overcome geographical diversity. For charities, there's a lot. It's not London-centric in an overwhelming sense in the way that, for example, other like the finance sector. We still are London-centric and there's still a lot of that. So this allows anyone from anywhere to basically, I mean, if you work in remote or hybrid, you can overcome geographical boundaries. And it gives you that stability with us, for example, we're in 2 days a week. We got this regularity and we start to see that we can perform different tasks. Like right now, we're actually in a room together, in a meeting room, and this lends itself to that. But, you know, tomorrow I can put my head down and focus 5 hours on a long article that I've been putting off. In the office isn't always as easy, depends on the day and who's here, but I know that I can separate my tasks based on that hybrid model. There are obviously like loads of cons to hybrid, you know, such as digital inequality. There's some frustration. Training can be a lot more difficult. You know, like I feel when you're sitting here with someone, you can say, so look, and if they've got a problem.
A lot more things you can pick up.
If they've got a problem and they're not getting something, you can, particularly with new starters, they don't want to say, I don't get that. But you can kind of see when they go, oh yeah, like that, and you're like, okay, look, here's what it is, you know. So, and then I think isolation can be a thing, but that's kind of overcome a little bit with hybrid, I think, when you get that stability. And finally, I'd say there is the presenteeism, proximity bias. Those things can, if organizations don't address them and mitigate that risk, then they can become problems in the long term with hybrid working.
I agree. And Laura, what is an ideal hybrid working model? Especially as a content writer, you need sometimes to spend away from everybody in silence and otherwise socializing or meeting.
I actually think what we've got is pretty perfect for what I would like, because I do like seeing people and I find that motivates me as well. Like I think I'm an introverted extrovert, I'd say. But so it just means I get like energy from other people. Not to talk about energy on the podcast.
I'm the same.
But yeah, exactly. It's just I need to see people, but then I think I do need to have that bit of time away as well to get things done. But I think having the mix and also having one day where we have to be in, which is our team day, so that's good to see everyone in the team. But the other day you can fit it around your schedule. It also means I'm getting my laundry done, and I know that sounds silly, but it's such a big part. Like I live with two housemates, fighting for that washing machine would be a nightmare. But I can put it on in the morning without any problem, like without having to worry about leaving the washing machine on while I'm out, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's so no detriment to like work or anything, so it's being able to fit it around your life. So I can't imagine if I had childcare needs, how much more difficult it would be to work a 9-to-5 job and not be able to get out for the school run. And also people with disabilities and other needs that need, you know, I think it's just a much more inclusive policy. So I don't think we should go back to anything.
No, I don't think we will.
No.
And I think there is other, we're talking about needs and I think there's other ways of reaching that asynchronous work.
Well done.
Yeah, so that's just basically like for people who don't know, that's the practice of working on a team that does not require all members to be online simultaneously. I think that's also inclusive. You know, people have different needs. One thing we used to see pre-pandemic was actually childcare, where people would work till 3 o'clock
and then they come back
online. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that's a really progressive policy from firms. Mm-hmm. And we can just see a lot more of that. And we know we can do it because the pandemic forced us to do it.
Yeah.
So the idea when someone turns around with business, turn around and go, no, we need you in the office 9-to-5. Well, you didn't last year. There's a lot of skepticism. I mean, I think in the Charity Digital Skills Report or one of these reports, there was something like 53% of people, it was in the 50% range, I can't remember, it was that they wouldn't apply for jobs that didn't offer some sort of flexible working these days. I would. And I think a lot of people wouldn't, because I would be suspect, to be honest. It's not just that they don't offer it, but suspect of an organisation, a charity, a business that isn't willing to meet the needs of their employees.
And that might not trust its employee to do the work.
And that's a problem, isn't it? If they don't trust them.
To be at home. I mean, if you're not trusting your employees in whatever form, that's your problem. It's not a reflection of the employees. It's a reflection of the company. They need to trust their employees.
Yeah.
And things can obviously go wrong. They always can. That's something then you address down the line. You have to start from that position of trust. And if the trust is eroded, then that obviously it's its own thing. And I think this is part of a wider discussions we're going to have in the future when we're talking about 10 years from now.
Yes.
We're talking at the minute. I think 10 years from now, we've seen the gig economy as a theory come through. What's interesting about the gig economy, that was a discussion way before the pandemic.
Absolutely.
What it's done is just basically fast-forwarded that. And stuff like, you know, like temporary flexible jobs. We talked about the precariat, and this is always seen as a negative, you know, like people having no stability in their work. Mm-hmm. No workers' rights is a big one in terms of the legislation and compliance around that. Mm-hmm. But I think there are benefits to the gig economy if it's done right. For example, you'd have the ability for companies to hire people to do specific jobs, and they'd be experts in those exact jobs rather than relying on someone who, like, do you know how to do this? And they're like, I could give it a go, which is often the case with mm-hmm. companies. I think it allows agility in terms of scaling up your workforce, but also lower costs in terms of you have a fixed rate getting someone to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that can translate to the individual, so people could also, you know, like, I'd rather do a job rather than sit in a desk for 8 hours and mm-hmm. figure out what I'm doing, do what I'm an expert at. In the past, I've worked in jobs where I'm kind of expect, oh, could you try this out? What's this? Mm-hmm. You know, and stuff like that. That's fine. But if I had a fixed rate of what I'm good at, mm-hmm. I would actually, as long as it was fair and just and mm-hmm. so on. And it builds, the gig economy would work with larger economic shifts, I think. Stuff like a more robust welfare state, for example, which is mm-hmm. a discussion we can have later, I think, with the 4-day week and sort of.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. And that's interesting that you say, because you would almost think that by having people that are good at, expert at one task, do you put your organization at risk? What if you don't have that person to perform that task and you need it urgently? So do you need to allow for a little bit of flexibility within roles still? You reckon so?
Yeah, I think one thing is a lot of smaller charities actually do that.
They
have to.
Having
to and that's fair. Hats, and, yeah. and I think they outsource some more specialist tasks, but small charities are one person, you know.
I think it's a lot easier to do nowadays as well. Like, we've got websites like Fiverr, which is on the charity digital exchange, that lets you, that's like a little marketplace for freelancers.
Absolutely.
And I just think there's a lot of ways, I think it's just been made easier to find people who will do that specific job for you.
And volunteers as well. So you can also somehow remove the pay part by just having very skilled volunteers for what you're trying to achieve, whether that's to support your beneficiaries, you know, on a phone or on, you know, social media or whatever, or, you know, having to perform, you know, physical services for them. And you can have, again, people from all across even the world to volunteer. But actually that brings us to, you know, another point, I guess, and what's something you alluded to when talking about 4 days week, etc. The internal structures and all the different ways that charities can operate, where do you see that going into the future?
I think there needs to be a lot more, or maybe not even a lot more, but there just needs to be transparency, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's, I think the working model as it is now, sort of the very top down, you know, that it's not going to be like that anymore. I was just thinking about like unlimited holiday days. And I read an example of one company that said their employees just weren't taking holidays. And I just think that if they see, they need to see like their bosses going on holiday as well. The minimum, they need like a set amount of, because I think if their bosses aren't taking their holidays, then you're going to be like, oh, I'm going to look bad if I don't take mine. So I think they need to be led from the top, but almost unofficially. But then at the same time, there needs to be a lot of, this sounds like so silly, because I was going to say at the same time, I think they need policies in place. So that, I think especially with COVID around and everything like that. Mm-hmm. So if you have been a contact of someone, you need to know where to go to find that thing before you, like, especially if you're working off Teams or working remotely, sometimes you're like, I don't know who to contact about this information.
Absolutely.
So having a policy in place that they can refer to as a source of truth or whatever, it's better than necessarily going to a person to find out that information if people are working all over. They might not have even met their person if they're working remotely, do you know what I mean? So I think there needs to be robust policies, but also it needs to be equal across the board. If everyone's going to adhere to those policies, that includes everyone at the top.
It's a very flat
agreed. And I think, like, it's we talk about agile working a lot. That's the big buzz. It's a kind of a buzz term, isn't it, a little bit, in the sense that I think, so the idea behind it is that, like, people, processes, connectivity, technology. There's no time, space. You have guidelines, but no boundaries, is kind of how they see it. And so it's basically the more fluid and pragmatic working style. But it seems to me more of a culture choice, because I've seen places which would be like, we have a agile working structures, but that's just, that's a word.
That's just a word.
You know what I mean? What do they mean by that?
I don't think it does mean much.
I think hierarchical versus flat structures is a bit more tangible. And particularly when you start digging deeper into layers of management. Ultimately, if you see a business or a charity and the way that they're modeled, you can see if it's flat or hierarchical. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's quite tangible. I think both have benefits. So the hierarchical structures has clear lines of reporting, clear lines of authority. Yeah. Again, stuff like what you were saying with transparency, probably transparency works in both, but in different ways. So you have flat structure, which is more peer-to-peer accountability. Mm. With hierarchical, it's more like you are accountable to this person. But I think the understanding of roles and responsibility is a bit better in hierarchical, because you're almost told exactly what's expected. And accountability is there from top down, which is obviously, for some people, a positive, for some people, a negative. Mm. Personally, I don't, this sounds like personally, I don't like being told what to do.
Yeah, he doesn't want to have a boss.
Yeah. No, but I mean, I like to get on with my job by understanding what I know I need to do.
Autonomous.
I like the autonomy, which is more, known for in flat structures. But I think another benefit of hierarchical structures is specialization. So for example, just even division of labor within a hierarchy is a lot simpler. But flat structures have the flexibility, they have the agility. So agile working does lend itself to flat structures, I think. And then there's collaboration and so on and so forth, which I think you get better in flat structures. But most importantly, I think probably the big win for most people is the sort of the flat structure. The benefit of the flat structure is the fact that you are it's a morale lifter. Mm. You're more part of the team. It's not like I work for this person, I work for this person, I work for this person. It's I work as part of a team that works towards a collective goal.
Exactly.
And that shared interest and shared achievement, it obviously boosts people morale.
And it boosts also, taking ownership of your role and taking initiative.
Yeah.
And I think that the main thing that hopefully we're going to see more organization and more business is having more employees taking more initiatives rather than waiting on maybe the big framework to actually all the stars to fall into line. Because what we've seen over the past 18 months is actually loads of people taking initiatives, most of them actually resulting in good results. I think that having more flat-like structures within organizations is more conducive to having more people taking initiatives, bringing new ideas to the table. And whether or not you want to implement more technology, it can help you take more initiative.
It doesn't actually have to be flat either. As long as it feels flat, if that makes sense.
People feel heard.
I think that there's loads of benefits to a hierarchy that Johan mentioned. I think there's so many. And it's good to know who you're reporting to in certain things. But I think, it just needs to feel like everyone has an equal part in the. And I think it comes back down to trust, actually.
Yeah.
Trust that everyone's working towards the same goal.
I think with charities as well, a lot of these structural decisions aren't decisions at all. I mean, most of them are just the way your charity works effectively with the budget you have. Like, it's just the way. I mean, there's all these other structures, mechanistic versus organic, functional, organizational, product-based divisional structures, geographical divisional structures, matrix structure, all these other things you can rally off if you just Google them. But basically all of this, I mean, you can find your structure. Many charities are actually going, do you know what? I really want a flat structure. You've all lost your jobs. It's not as simple as that. You gear towards a culture.
Yeah.
And again, it's a culture. And like you're saying, it's not, I imagine there's very few organizations that have a very, very flat structure.
It is hard to attain. I'm also wondering, will this future of work make a different space for trustees? Because sometimes we think that, you know, trustees are usually a bit older. It's a bit hard to recruit for some that are tech savvy. Mm. Will the future of work allow trustees to be even more part of the organizations on the boards they set? Mm. Do you reckon so?
I'd hope so, actually. Yeah. Because, I mean, I think it's good for everyone to see the trustees. I think a lot of people, even working in charities, don't really know what trustees do. Yeah. And I don't think that's the way it should feel for anyone. No. And I think the more involved they are, I think the more people, I think that possibly are younger people wanting to become trustees.
Yeah.
But if they see it when they're in a junior job, they're going to know what they're going into. They're going to want to, they're going to aspire to that a bit more. Exactly. Because you can only be what you see, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's the whole, people say when they get higher up jobs, right, they feel like they don't have the fingers and
they don't feel stuck in
anymore. Yeah. So I feel like if you can feel like you're still having a direct impact on, I think it'd be great to have trustees more inside, accounted for rather than outside of the organization.
Yeah, I mean, also from my perspective, I'd like to see trustees take up, it seems silly to say risk, but at the same time, these are things that I think so many in the charity sector particularly is a conservative sector in many ways. And I think a lot of these things that we're talking about, they seem scary. And we saw during the pandemic that people would actually do it, but it was through necessity. We know it was forced. And we said that in a positive way. Now I want to see them kind of make these things. I mean, we're going to move on to talk about sort of 4-day week and unlimited holidays. And of course, I want all those things. But what I mean is there's so much research to suggest these things have positive impacts on your employees. They have positive results. They lead to increased productivity. And I'd like to see trustees take the mantle and go, okay, this is why we should do this, rather than do what I think a lot of trustees are often prone to doing, which is take that risk aversion and sort of go, well, it's working as it is, because a lot of the time with charities, it isn't working. Yeah. You're not raising the funds. And you need to address that with dynamic sort of solutions that could actually lead to productivity, which I'm sure we'll get onto. Yeah. So I'm not going to jump the gun.
Yeah. Well, it's going to change over time. It's about being agile as well, isn't it?
It's about the bravery of taking that choice and saying, we are going to, now we're going to move towards a flat structure. We're going to implement a 6-hour workday.
Because the reality is nothing is perfect, right? No, and what's perfect now will change next time. So I'm sure we'll get a lot of people being like, oh, let me go back into the office. I worry for people, like Airbnb is going to attract a certain amount of people with that thing who love remote working, but at a certain point they won't like that anymore. Mm. It's going to suit them in that situation and not in others.
And that is the nature of rolling with the punches.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. So the trustees
should be at the forefront of that.
And the forefront
and
of
that's
that.
The thing is not just sitting back. And that's what I'd like to see them doing, steering and being active rather than passive, rather than reactive, rather than just accepting what's come along, instead steering right direction
absolutely.
And growing,
absolutely. And as we're on the subject of trustees and obviously our listening audience are our charities, so do you reckon many charities will see any surprises with these new working patterns or working methods?
One of the things I've been reading about for years actually is the 4-day week and also less working hours. So I remember John Maynard Keynes in 1930, he said technology will lead us to a 15-hour work week. Bertrand Russell, Praise of Idleness, has a famous passage where he says there will be 4-hour work days in the future. These are the kind of things that we've been seeing and people have been talking about for so long. And yet they seem to somehow get longer, maybe it's just the time, but I just think that I don't think a 4-hour work day is close. I think a 6-hour work day is a plausible solution where you would actually, and we've seen it happened in Sweden and myriad other places. I mean, they do these sorts of experiments all around the world and they seem to yield really positive results. And everyone seems to go, well, that's nice. Rather than actually kind of take the steps and think, okay, well, how can we do this? And the charity sector could again lead the way with this sort of
absolutely.
Stuff. So 4-day weeks. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say 4-hour work days. I do think that's too little, but 6-hour work days, where they actually sort of say you're 6 hours, but you're still expected to produce the same amount. Mm-hmm. There's no sitting around on social media. Mm-hmm. Productivity is there. And I just think, again, it depends on a few things, but it really depends mainly on the will of organizations to actually take these what are seen as risks. But look at the stats and look at the studies and see what was out there and be dynamic, be risky if that's what you want to do. I mean, again, I shouldn't be to like saying all this, but I do think obviously take stock of your own charity and what you can achieve.
Well, likely change anyway, so you may as well change
it. It will change,
right? Right? Yeah.
You might as well lead on it, especially the charity sector. I do think we've got the right things in place. Like, we've had to adapt over COVID-19, like, we've done it. Absolutely. Adapt again, keep going. But don't stop now.
And I think it's part of a more more wide-ranging economic social shift, as you were saying. Yeah. There is going to come one way or the other. Mm. I mean, trade unions have called in for it for years. But I think, you know, when you look at, like, again, we talked earlier about a more robust welfare state, universal basic income, another thing we've been talking about for years. There were studies in the 70s about universal basic income, and have been studies ever since.
Mm-hmm, like,
just
absolutely.
Constantly reaffirming that it could work. And some saying that, that actually has negative effects, that it's too costly and so on and so forth. So they're obviously both sides. But I think with universal basic income, it would open up, it would empower employees a lot more within the charity.
And way more people in total. Yeah,
yeah, I think you could see a boom to the economy. But also, I think in terms of the benefits of the universal basic income on a general level, is it gives people more incentives, more freedom to choose their work rather than choose what they have to do.
Yeah.
And that's positive for organizations too, because yes, they have to maybe offer some, you know, stuff like the 6-hour workday, maybe they have to offer complete remote working and so on and so forth. But when they'll get people, they'll get the right people who chose them, who wanted to work for them, who feel pride of place. Mm. And that's more likely to add to a general morale boost and a general happiness of the entire country to like maybe a little bit of proportion. But and the final thing I'll just say is it allows people also universal basic income, if that is the way we're going, I think it would allow people to train lifelong and finesse their skills. Mm. And then you've got a more educated, a more informed workforce in every single way.
And more motivated.
And more motivated. Exactly. And people who want to do the tasks and want to do the jobs, rather than a lot of the time, I think there is this economic compulsion that pushes people into work that they don't want to do. And then we're surprised when they're demoralized and they're not performing in the way that you want them to. You have to have high morale. You have to have people who feel a stake within the organizations. And the charity sector, again, I think, well, obviously can't lead the way on universal basic income. They can lead the way on sort of advocating for these things and seeing the future of work, which is going to be more free and more dynamic. And instead of sort of waiting for that to come, go out and get it.
Go and get it,
probably a weird way of putting that.
It's
not qualifying.
And Laura, wanted to add something?
Oh, no, well, it's just about productivity, really. Mm. And I remember I was talking to someone when it was unflexible working was like a new thing. And not that new, but like less people were doing it. And someone, she was an expert in belonging and how to get people to belong in the company. She said how risk averse some of the businesses that she were talking to were about introducing remote working. And she said, the thing you just got to ask is the work done? And I think that's what it boils down to a lot of the time. Just
exactly.
Is the work done?
Yeah.
If it's done, then you don't need to worry about how someone's working.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Outcome-based, really.
Yeah. Outcome-based, yeah.
I do think that's a massive thing as well. Is like, we talk about trust, and one of the key things with trust is you trust me to get the job done. And I'll do that in my way. And if and you look at the outcome, and if it's good, then well done. That should be the simplicity.
Yeah.
But instead, sometimes we are kind of in this culture, generally, I'm talking about the entire economy, where it's like we're overseeing that you're at your office, at your desk for 9 hours a day.
It's actually how burnout happens as well. Yeah. Because you're stuck even if you're not actively working, you're stuck at your computer, you're still in work.
And you don't get the relaxation time. It's cutting into that.
Exactly, because you're at work. That's those are very, very interesting points. And dare I say, do you have any, you know, if you had a crystal ball, where would you see maybe the new world going in terms of reaching for new volunteers or reaching out to beneficiaries? Do you know, how what we've been discussing so far, how is that going to influence the way people give to charities and the way people use charity services?
I just think that, like, volunteering, it doesn't have to be done in person.
And
we're seeing how people need help with social media, and I think we're seeing how the parameters of volunteering change, what people can actually help with. There's mapping that people are doing for whole other countries. And so I think there's I think if you can do that, then we can do anything, really.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
No, totally agree. And mm-hmm. I think all these things, the wider, bigger picture stuff as well, it just leads to people hopefully having more time to volunteer.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, if you're working 6-hour days, of course I'm going to spend a bit more time. Okay. We've got quite often burnt out, like you say, and we'd have very little time, so it sometimes does... I'd love to volunteer more, but I really am so busy that it's hard to find.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of charities will know this, but you want consistent volunteers. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to say, I can give you this amount of time per week, when really I struggle to find that time for myself. So I think these things will change the general sector, the general economy, the general mm-hmm. country, and hopefully in a really positive way. And we'll see more volunteering, and we'll see less reason to volunteer, hopefully, as well. Mm-hmm. In that hopefully, you know, this does alleviate poverty and tackle inequality and all these things too. So, you know, we'll have to see. But broadly, when I read these things, I do feel positive. And I think because there's such an appetite for them during the pandemic, mm-hmm. we saw the appetite grow. I see the future going that way, and more so than I did pre-pandemic. So a very strange silver lining to COVID, perhaps, but still, nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
See what we can do. Why not do it again?
Exactly. Well, great. Well, that brings us to the end of that very interesting discussion. Thank you very much, Laura and Johan, for being part and for sharing loads of interesting ideas. So we hope you enjoyed listening to our podcast, and we hope you will join us again soon for another episode.
Thank you.
Thank you.